Newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your host every week, right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and at Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Happy Monday, Neil. How are you today?
Is it a happy Monday? This is a Money Talk show, and the market didn't do that well today.
Well, let's not have our emotions tied to the markets.
Oh, I don't. I think it's, you know, to be expected.
To be expected, especially given all of the noise out there about the trade war. It's to be expected that we saw a drop in the market today.
Well, after you introduce our guest, I will bring in our first article, which actually relates to the trade war.
Perfect. Well, we have in studio with us Matthew Fish, and he is from Anderson Financial Solutions and Insurance Services. Thank you so much, Matt, for being here with us today. And
thank
we can't wait to talk about insurance.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
That's actually a phrase you don't hear very much. I can't wait to talk about insurance. Usually insurance...
I thought you would pick up on it. That's why I said it.
It's actually the first time I've ever heard that phrase.
Right, so exactly.
Thank you.
Well, you know the old joke.
Well, it's either trade war or insurance. Well, the uplifting show we have.
The old joke was that if you're on an airplane and someone's bothering you, just tell them you're a life insurance salesman and they'll stop talking to you.
On an airplane, no one's ever said, is there a life insurance agent on board?
Right. So the first article that I have is sort of... relevant because it talks about the effect of tariffs that were already implemented. And there was a study done recently that took a look at what was the effect of the increase in tariffs on washing machines and dryers. And what they found was that consumers bore between 125 and 225% of the cost of the tariffs. Study calculated that tariffs brought in about $82 million to the U.S. Treasury while raising consumer prices by $1.5 billion. And, you know, this is the problem with the whole idea that a tariff war can be helpful. It could only be helpful if it's a war where there's a winner. And over the last 100 years, there's never been a winner in a war about tariffs. And, you know, the whole notion that Trump has said, and I don't know whether he says it just as a matter of not understanding or just because it sounds good, the idea that China is going to pay for the tariffs is just not true. It's a tax, and it's paid for by whether it's the company that buys the goods or by the individual that buys the end product.
Well, really, it's always the individual that buys the end product is the one paying for it because the companies pay more and then they raise their prices. And so, in essence, what a trade or a tariff war is in effect a tax on the people buying the goods and services.
And one of the more ironic results of this is that rather than to create more jobs in this country, what you see in the newspapers the last 3-4 days is companies rushing around to find other countries in lower labor cost markets that could provide the goods that they're buying from China. So it's not as if people are going to build a manufacturing facility for washing machines in the U.S. If it was economically viable, they would have done that before. They're just looking to whether or not Vietnam can end up providing the kind of low-cost goods that China was providing.
So, yeah, the other Southeast Asian countries are the ones that are going to benefit because, you know, it takes a while to set up a manufacturing facility in another country. And at this point, most American companies have created their manufacturing in China to the specifications that they need. What we're seeing now is more new manufacturing facilities in Malaysia or Vietnam or Bangladesh. And I think it will take some time to get the quality control that that companies have managed to achieve in China in those other markets just because they're so new.
And the end of the article, it gives the further negative aspect of a tariff, and that is if you look at the number of additional jobs, and in the case of washing machines, there were additional jobs. There were 1,800 jobs created, and that was at a cost of $800,000 a piece. So even when you create jobs, the cost of creating those jobs is really astronomical. The next article is by your favorite writer, Jason Zweig of the Wall Street Journal, and by the way, interesting, the name of his column is called The Intelligent Investor. And
I think that's why you like it so much.
Well, because The Intelligent Investor comes from Graham and Dodd's book. And he talks about, he kind of remembers the three important rules that Graham in his book stated as what's important when you are investing. And he said in this article, you know, given what's going on today, maybe we should just take a fresh look at what he said back in 1937. Remember that Graham and Dodd are the ones that taught Warren Buffett at Columbia and who Warren Buffett essentially follows their investment philosophy. And they had three tenets that they said are important. One is that a stock isn't a piece of paper or an electronic blimp, but an ownership stake in an underlying business that can be evaluated based on cash flow that it's likely to produce. And second, the market may swing from euphoria to misery, but you aren't obliged to share those moods. And third, you must allow margins of safety because unless you think in probability rather than certainty, you're going to always end up, you know, making the wrong decision. And the reason he brings all this up is that the style of investing that Graham and Dodd has advocated, and again, that Warren Buffett has emulated, hasn't worked the last 2 years. And they go on in this article to say that value investing really has lagged behind the market. But it's not the last 2 years that matter. It's the last 100 years that matter. And if we're in an environment like we're in now where the market's swinging, you know, 500, 600, 700, 800 points, it may be a good time to go and take a look at these rules, and maybe those rules could help, you know, steady some people.
Right, because for individual investors, even though you said 100 years, which is true in the big picture, most people from the time that they retire where they're going to need their funds is at least 30 years. And the last 2 years not working in whatever investment strategy may be, but you want to make sure that over the long term, it's going to net you the results that you need in order to live comfortably.
And despite all of this, the next article I brought in talks about the leverage loan reality. Leverage loans loans made to companies with high outstanding debt, they've grown 20%, and the amount of leverage loans, that is, the companies that have, you know, less than stellar financial ratios, now exceeds the peak levels reached in 2007, and the article, you know, basically goes to say that if we end up with a crisis similar or even not as bad as 2008, you have these leveraged loans that could present a problem.
I think that what you need to keep 2008 in perspective, because really 2008 was made even that much worse by the fact that it was the banking institutions that were the ones that were taking down the economy. Whereas with leveraged loans, as in addition to the banks being not shored up for capitalism as we know it, that I think made the situation that much worse in 2008 than what we'd see today.
Well, on this point, there's a companion article to the one I just talked about, which is that there's been a sharp rally in speculative-grade corporate bonds as opposed to corporate loans, and bond yields are right now bond yields, which typically exceed those of loans, because the holders have more protection in the case of bankruptcy. We've seen it flip, and so what you have is, you know, corporate bonds yielding below comparably rated loans, which, you know, is surprising. Because, you know, again, the loan is backed up by the assets of the company, and corporate bonds come after that. And so there's this continued desire among investors to look for yield without really considering the possibilities that we could be headed for rough times. And if you end up with a full-scale trade war, one of the things that we could be facing is not just a slowdown in the economy, but also some real pressure on those borrowers that are so highly leveraged and are and people who own these bonds without the kind of protection given the kind of leverage these companies have.
Well, and as we've discussed in previous shows, the covenants of those bonds have also changed, and people are primarily unaware.
So the final article I have has to do with the Uber type gig economy. And, you know, Uber, again, was down today, as it was the Friday after their initial
public. That might be unfair. Most things were down today.
Right. Well,
like everything.
But typically, you know, new technology issues are priced so that there's a pop.
And, exactly. And Uber has not enjoyed any pop at all. It's been lackluster at best.
And this article talks not just about Uber, but the entire gig economy. And with the job market so tight, a couple of things could be negative for companies like Lyft and Uber, and that is you don't need that kind of job anymore. You don't need a job that you are supplementing your income if you can get a real job that you can have full time. And the turnover rate is astronomical. The IPO did not talk about, for whatever reason, attrition, but it does talk about the annualized attrition was, in fact, at the peak in the third quarter of 2018. So you've got very high turnover in the gig economy and a very, very tight labor market. And, you know, one of two things are going to happen. Either you're not going to be able to find people to do these kinds of jobs, which would have a, you know, negative impact, obviously, on gig economy providers, but also everyone has been really happy about inflation being under control. Something has to give. There's very low unemployment. People are having trouble finding employees. And, you know, gains in wages have been, up until the last couple of quarters, very, very modest. And so if you have a continued growing economy, which we may or may not, given the tariff situation, you could end up with finally, which would be ultimately good for most people, increase in wages, but that could also be beginning of driving up inflation, which would then cause maybe the Fed to rethink their tame policy.
Absolutely.
You seem excited by that article.
It was uplifting.
It was uplifting.
Uplifting.
It was uplifting. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So, Matt, thanks so much for being here with us. So we have Matt Fish, who is a licensed financial advisor and an insurance specialist at Anderson Financial Solutions. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, how did you get into the insurance industry as a UCSB grad? You know, what led you down this path?
Well, my story actually goes back to 1995 when I started at UCSB. I went in there, just graduated from Taft High School at Woodland Hills, and just full of excitement, ready to be a freshman at UCSB, poli-sci major, was going to go to law school and do the whole thing. And I went for about 3 years. And after about 3 years, I was just running out of gas, and I needed to take some time off. So I moved back to L.A., waited tables for a few months, went and traveled for about 6 months. And when I came back, it was May. I was going to be coming back. We had a house on the Mesa. I was going to be finishing up with my senior year with a bunch of my friends. And I met these guys, and they were stockbrokers. And I would wait on them every day. And one right before I was about to move back, they basically offered me a job with a company, what was Payne Webber, which is now UBS. And they said, well, rather than go back to school, we'll put you in the training program. We'll get you a Series 7. You'll make $36,000 a year, and we'll throw you in with this team. And, you know, you'll go on to be another one of Payne Webber's, you know, great brokers out there. So when I came home, told my parents that I'm not going back to school, and I was going to take that opportunity and run with it. Once they started talking to me again.
How long was that?
It took a few days. My dad was excited. I did that for a number of years. And then I went from there and I got my first taste of insurance with a company called AXA, which owns Equitable and AllianceBernstein, big conglomerate out there. And they had a program where I would sell variable annuities, retirement planning to school teachers and nonprofits. And I was able to start cross-selling different types of insurance, disability, long-term care, life, et cetera. Well, in 2008, my father had passed away, and I'd been talking about always wanting to go back to school. And I told my mother that this was the year I was going to be to do it. And she said, Matthew, either put up or shut up. We've been having this conversation for years. So I called UCLA. I've actually walked right into UCLA and said, I'm a UC student. I haven't been to school in 10 years, but I'd like to finish up. What do I do? And they said, well, basically, you need to come back to Santa Barbara. That'd be the system's really not set up for transfers, especially in your 30s, to be able to do that. So I literally quit my whole life. I blindly moved back to Santa Barbara. I re-enrolled back at UCSB in my early 30s. And after about – and I changed my major to be a accounting and economics is what it was. And I didn't know what to do after a couple of months, so I made a bunch of cold calls. And to financial advisors, I probably called your office, Diane.
You probably did.
And I said, yeah, I'm a student. I'm a fully licensed financial advisor for the last 10 years or so. And I'm looking for someone who can give me some part-time work. Here's what I need to make a week. And my schedule is going to change every 10 weeks. And when I called Brent, he said, I've been looking for someone like you for 30 years. So little by little, he started giving me more and more work to do, and I went to school less and less, in which I eventually did 1 year's worth. It took me about 3.5 years, and I finally did graduate in 2012. And when I did that, Brent gave me a more full-time position, which is where I am now. But having said that, Brent has been in the been in the insurance business for 47 years, and that's really where I started to get the experience of working with life, disability, long-term care. We always just kind of outsourced that or did some joint work or just kind of pawned that off to somebody else. So to make a short story long, that's my trek in the insurance business over the last 10, 15 years.
Well, congratulations on graduating college in 15 years.
So thank sure you. Yes. Sure you can call me Dr. Proud. Fish. So, right. Yes. Thank you.
Probably felt like you paid for Dr. Fish, but only got...
By the way, you know, these colleges look at the statistics of how long it takes people to graduate. You must have been something they were very proud of, too.
Well, apparently, yes. I'll be paying it off longer than it took me to go,
but that's
okay. But
your mom is proud, and she has a graduate
and
on
you know
her
what?
Hands.
And that's that's all that matters, right?
Right.
Degree, jashmi. You make your mom proud. That's worth its weight. That's worth the student loan payment every month.
Hopefully you can get it paid off faster than it took to take out, right?
Well, yes. I mean, working with financial advisors such as yourself who refer business over, then, you know, that'll get it paid off.
So tell us a little bit about a typical client that you work with at Anderson Financial Solutions, and how do you help them through their insurance needs as well as any other financial needs that they have?
Well, you know, in the insurance business, it's hard to come up with an ideal client because it's not really a niche product. It's something that everybody needs, right? They say you buy insurance because you either love someone or you owe someone, and a lot of times it's both.
I often say it's for the risk that you can't afford.
Correct. So what you're looking at is protection. We help people figure out, well, what exactly is important to them? Is it their family? Is it their ability to go out and earn an income? Like, what would you do tomorrow if you couldn't go and earn an income, right? That's something that's probably worth protecting. What if longevity runs in your family and you're going to go and spend down all your life savings in the last couple of years of your life to be able to pay for assisted care, assisted living, and that sort of thing? So we help people identify all different levels of risk that they can't afford not to insure, right? It might be a 23-year-old person who just had a baby, brand new married, and they might need some cheap term insurance. So really, there's really nobody out there that we can't help, because everybody has some sort of need that they can't afford to take on themselves to not insure themselves.
Right. And so, you know, what do you find that, so the 23-year-old who just had a baby, you also, I think what makes you unique is that you also are very, you stay up on all of the different products. Because I have to say what most insurance people are is they don't really understand their products, which makes it very difficult for them to answer questions of clients when they have them. And so I think that really makes you unique, that you're always out there looking at different products and truly understanding them. So what would you say for somebody that needed more permanent insurance? They had some degenerative disease that they wouldn't be able to qualify later on, and they needed whole life or universal life. Walk us through a case such as that.
I'm sorry, can you be more specific? Yeah. So
basically somebody who needs permanent insurance versus a term insurance.
Okay, so when you're taking a look at permanent insurance, you're either buying it for one of two ways, right? Some people are buying it for the protection aspect, right? I need to insure my life because I want to be able to ensure that my family is going to be able to survive, you know, on income that I'm not going to be there to provide. So I would buy a permanent policy for that, right? There's also another way to buy permanent insurance, and that is for income. And a lot of people don't know about the investment components of a permanent life insurance product. So again, when you're figuring out and you're assessing what type of coverage does this person need on a permanent basis, well, there is whole life, there's index universal life, there's universal life, there's variable universal life. Like you said, there's lots of different products. So whatever this person is trying to accomplish, that's what we're going to do and find them the best fit. As independent brokers, you know, we're not pigeonholed to just one particular strategy and try to get everybody into that one particular one. So
the one inherent conflict, which is very difficult to avoid, is that there's a huge disparity in commissions for those different products. And so integrity is really an important part of being helpful to your client, because if the client's naive and the broker is not ethical, you could end up pushing them into a product that really is only good for you rather than for them.
Well, absolutely. And that's usually what we find, is that if people do have insurance policies and they come in, they don't know what they have. They know they have protection, meaning they know what it says on the policy. They know they have 500,000, they know they have a million, they know they have 5 million. But what they don't know is about their coverage. Right? Those are really the two components, protection and coverage. So a lot of times what we'll have to do is really just go through and just at the very least explain to them what they got, right? Because, yeah, I mean.
Because all too often they get sold something because somebody has a mortgage payment to make, and who knows if that person actually really needs it.
Right. I had a client recently where they had $3 million worth of term insurance. It was coming to the end of the term. They wanted to re-up for an additional $3 million. And right as we were about to issue the policy, they got a letter from their insurance company Can I say the name? Or is it,
sure.
Okay. So this is with Banner Life, and they're a fine institution. They've been around for a very long time, and they've done real well in the term industry. But what they did is that they sent them a letter, and they said, we'll give you an additional $1 million worth of coverage, right? All you need to do is sign, and it's going to be an extra $20 a month. So he said, Matt, you know what? I'm going to back off and take this million, and I'll just put $2 million worth of the new insurance policy. I said, fax me or email me whatever you got. And what it is that it was he didn't know what he was looking for. It just looked like $1 million worth of insurance. But if you really read through all the fine print of what it says, it was an accidental death policy, right? And the way that those work, it's not really like a life insurance policy where it's kind of a no questions asked. You produce a dead body and we'll produce you a check kind of a thing. This is you have to die on a particular day and a particular hour. And, there's all these very specifics that are there. So, again, you really have to know what you're buying and why you're buying it.
On that pleasant note, you're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Hey, Nick Cannon here. So of course we all know there's lots of talent in America. But unfortunately, there's something else we've got way too much of. Childhood hunger. 17 million kids struggle with it in this country. But here's the thing. This problem is entirely solvable. Seriously, we already produce more than enough healthy, nutritious food in this country to feed every single last one of those hungry kids. We just need a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks is out there every day gathering surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across the country. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Foresters have been proud to bring NBC Championship Baseball to Santa Barbara and Goleta for more than 20 years. I'm Bill Pintar. Each year our organization starts from scratch, raising money to support our team and our costs associated with our move to Pershing Park. Help make sure that the team has the financial ability to continue this tradition. For information on how you can help, call 805-684-0657 and let's stir it up.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you have a question for our guest or us, you can call us at
805-564-1290. We could become a singing group.
We could, Neil.
We could.
Although it would neither be best if it would be best for only the deaf to listen.
Right, because neither of us can sing.
Sing.
Is that correct?
Yes, that would be a correct assumption.
That hasn't stopped a lot of bands that I've seen before. That, you know, just singing is overrated.
Well, it makes me think of Milli Vanilli back in the 80s.
Exactly.
That they just lip-synced and looked good, right? That was all about the 80s. So we're talking about life insurance. And while we were on the break, Neil said to Matt, so Matt, do you keep a pillow at your desk so when you're reading these contracts, you know, your head doesn't hit something hard? And so tell us what you responded with, Matt.
What I was saying is that a lot of language from policy to policy is relatively the same. I mean, there are some details in there with what the insurance company can do contractually. But the real meat, where you could really find out what's going inside of someone's policy, then again, we're talking about permanent life insurance policies. A term policy is just going to be a term policy. But you're going to run what's called an in-force illustration. And that's going to tell you kind of what you got, where your policy is going to go, if you continue to pay your premiums, what would happen if you don't pay your premiums, if you back off, all of the different combinations of things that could possibly happen is going to come out of that what's called an in-force illustration, and really encourage anybody every several years, any policy holders out there, that if they haven't had an in-force illustration or they haven't reviewed their policy, it's just like your securities portfolio, your retirement account or anything. You want to make sure that you're keeping up to date with what's going on, because you might have bought a policy that's 15 years old, right? And just like anything, would you buy a car that's 15 or 20 years old? You'd probably want to take a look at what's in the market. Things get more efficient. The products get more competitive. For instance, this year, they're redoing all of the mortality tables. So all the insurance companies, they redid them in 2017. So all of the insurance companies over the next year are going to be stretching out those fees because people are living longer and longer. So if you have a policy that's maybe 20 years old with a bunch of cash, it's going to be getting eaten up in fees faster than it would be, right, if it was based on a life expectancy that was much longer. So again, you just want to be running these in-force illustrations to find out what's inside that policy.
Now, what happens when you do run the in-force illustration, but your client has some health issues that they're dealing with? What are some tips for people? Like, what's a non-starter? I know that I've had a client who has been diagnosed with diabetes, and it's pretty severe. However, he was still able to qualify, maybe not at the preferred premium rate, but at a standard rate due to other factors.
Well, the first thing I would do is not lie on the application, right? That's number one.
Not lying. I subscribe to that in all aspects, yes. Facets of life. You should not lie.
Even when you tell me that you're not lying, a lot of times we find it all comes out in the end. So that's number one. But number two,
well, something that's important is, as you are the insurance agent, if you're putting the insurance in place for people, so if I say, hey, Matt, I smoke, should I put it down on the app? And you say, if you smoke, you should put it on the app. And I write, no.
Right.
that's kind of a problem. Right?
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Insurance is somewhat niche business. You know, everyone's looking for those preferred cases where they can just go right through underwriting. Any carrier out there will gladly take those. But when you're looking at diabetes, or you're looking at cancer, or you're looking at HIV, or you're looking at smokers, or all the various ailments that people might have that might, you know, put a few hurdles in the way of underwriting, certain companies, they get very niche. For instance, medical marijuana has become a very, very big thing here, especially in California, right? Well, how do you underwrite that? It used to just get tossed right into the smoker category. Well, Prudential is on the vanguard of that here in California, where they're writing non-tobacco preferred rates on that, right? I have a friend who he's got type 2 diabetes, and we were able to get him an index universal life policy or a permanent policy with Lincoln, because they're a little bit more lenient. So the insurance companies know that in order to be competitive with those sorts of things, they have to kind of give a little to get a little in certain niches when it comes to people in less than standard health.
When you are in a small town like Santa Barbara, and I guess this is true for real estate brokers too, it must be difficult to build a portfolio of clients, because if somebody has insurance, that means they already have a broker. How do you market yourself in an environment where there's a small pool, relatively small pool of potential clients, and probably, unless they're very young, they already have a relationship with someone?
Well, you could say that really about any industry. You know, it's the guy who owns the bicycle shop. There's only so many people who ride a bike. But, you know, if you have a successful shop, if you're making the right connections, you're networking with the right people, you put yourself out there as a credible resource, you do a lot of work for free where you're willing to do assessments for people, you know, it naturally happens. I find that cream kind of rises to the top there. Me specifically, what I've done as a financial advisor, I was running into that, where I was competing with top advisors like Diane over at Arlington, and there's just so many good ones here in town. But what I realized is that financial advisors were not necessarily selling insurance, or if they were, it was, you know, someone would come in and say, I need $1 million worth of insurance, and they'd sell them $1 million worth of insurance. But as far as disability, long-term care, life insurance that is a little bit more involved, advisors were really leaving that on the table. So several years ago, it just became very clear, well, why don't I start partnering with different advisors, right? And be the resource to them. They already have the trust. They already, you know, kind of own that client. The client would do anything that the advisor says, because they're so intertwined financially. and emotionally, if you're really a good financial advisor, that partnering with them, it just it's opened up a lot of opportunities for me that I might not have had trying to work directly with the public that way.
Well, and I also find that many insurance agents don't go back and reassess the policies. So you may have a life insurance policy from 20 years ago that is depleting its cash value because the fees are so expensive. And if you meet with somebody, you're able to roll that and get a better deal for yourself.
So what about health insurance, particularly like the Blues? The commissions are very small, if anything, aren't they? Or, you know, the Affordable Care Act. You're working to help people, I imagine, have those kind of policies. But is their compensation in line with the work?
You know, to be honest, there was a sleeve of our office that handled a lot of that stuff. I never got into any of the health insurance aspect. And because of that, because of the ever-changing legislation, it's just gotten thinner and thinner and thinner in terms of compensation. You really need to have a tremendous amount of volume to make that a viable business. So we've outsourced that to people who have the manpower to be able to make that happen. So, you know, when it comes to health insurance, that's an ever-changing game from day to day. I was joking with Diane before the show that if we started talking about health insurance, no matter what I said right now, by tomorrow the law would be different.
Those companies that can work for low fees because they have a lot of volume. It's the old joke, you know, we're losing money on each unit, but we're increasing the number of units we're selling.
Right.
I don't understand the economics of that business either.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So let's transition a little bit into disability insurance, because many of our listeners either are self-employed or working. How does disability insurance work, and where do you see the right fit for people, and who should get it?
Well, on some level, people have most companies, they'll provide some sort of group, like you'll see law firms in town, right, where people are making a couple $100,000. You figure, well, they've got a group plan that, let's say it replaces $10,000 a month, but if they're used to making $30,000 a month, obviously there's going to be a tremendous shortfall that's there, right? So what you'd want to do is get yourself a policy that will insure that income in the event that you're not able to do your specific job, right? Because when you're taking a look at disability, the definitions, going back to what's written in contracts, the definitions of what's going on in that disability policy is more important than in any other type of policy that you'll have. Because just because I can't sit here and do a radio show with you doesn't mean that I can't go work retail or I can't do another job.
So it's that own occupation.
You want to make sure that you're looking at that own occupation and all the subsequent definitions that go along with that. And it's not even talking about just the attorneys that are working, making hundreds of thousands of dollars. People that work in high commission jobs, right? Like, let's say, for instance, real estate agents. They're really only as good as their last deal. So if they're used to making 20, 30, 10,000, whatever it is, their income comes in these big chunks, and then all of a sudden they're not able to go to work for 6 months. Well, that makes it pretty tough. You're going to want to ensure that you can ensure your ability to go out there and make that income.
And how difficult is it to find those policies today of those own occupations? So basically doing the job, not any job, because you could be a pencil counter, let's say,
right,
but your job that you're specifically trained to do. How difficult is it to find them?
It's not very difficult at all. The insurance companies, if there's a way to underwrite the risk, they've figured it out. And there's different occupation classes. So if you have a 1A or 2B, or as it goes up, by the time you get to 5 or 6, you might be talking about a brain surgeon, something like that. So they've kind of figured that out, and all of that is underwritten. So for instance, there was an attorney where he was a trial attorney, and he was phenomenal at it, and he came down with something called Bell's palsy, right? And what Bell's palsy is, without getting into the whole medical thing, but basically a nerve in your face turns off and the side of his face kind of slunk down, right? So he wasn't able to perform in front of a jury the same way that he was. However, he was still able to be a brilliant attorney sitting in office doing paperwork. So he was able to go on claim because he was not able to do his specific job as that trial attorney, even though he can still be an attorney. So, yeah, you really want to take a look. It's very, very important that, you're taking a look at the definitions of what it is that you're buying, what it is that you have, and also laid upon what you're going to have if your employer provides a group plan for you.
So let's say my employer provides a group plan and it makes up 50% of my income. Would I then come to you and say, hey, I need to make up this other, the 50% that's not covered? And am I able to get that in a private policy?
You'd be able to get a piece, but what happens is that you really can't insure more than 70% of your income. Because if you have more than 70% of your income, guess what? People start finding ways to stay on claim and not go back to work. So you're never going to be able to get everything back. And it's usually in California, maybe 65 or 70%. So if your group plan has 50% with a private policy, you'll be able to get maybe 65 or 70, you know, up to 65 or 70%.
And how does a policy like Aflac, which they advertise directly, how does that work in the whole big picture of disability?
Again, that's going to be a group plan. So it's really there to set kind of a base amount for people that, it'll provide 20 or 30% or something like that. And then you're going to want to layer something on top of that. And again, I don't want to get, I've never sold the Aflac plan. So, I don't want to get too specific about it, but from a 10,000 foot view, that's really what it's there to kind of add to provide that base coat of coverage there for you.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
They get our kids to school safely.
Okay, so walk me through how you got to this answer.
They provide critical support in the classroom.
Chicken sandwich, my favorite.
They keep students nourished, so they're ready to learn.
I'm an outie.
They are there when accidents happen.
Oh, you're gonna need a Band-Aid.
And they keep our schools beautiful.
School bus drivers, custodians, nurses, paraeducators, just a few of the education support professionals who help schools in California run smoothly every day. This is David Goldberg, Secretary Treasurer of the California Teachers Association. They ensure that our students have a safe ride to school, healthy meals, and a clean environment to learn. So take a moment to say thank you to the ESPs in your school.
A message from the California Teachers Association.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So if you're just joining us, we have Matt Fish, who's an insurance specialist with Anderson Financial Solutions. And so, Matt, now we talked about people needing life insurance, you know, as they're insuring the young new family or what have you. But is there really a need for people over 65 to have life insurance?
The simple answer is yes. Right, because life insurance, there's been a lot of positioning it as an asset class. You know, you have your stocks, your bonds, you have money that you keep in cash, and you know from, you know, year to year what you're earning. I've got my portfolio's making 6%, my portfolio's making 10%, whatever it's going to be. Right. So as an asset class, an insurance policy, when it pays out, you're looking at the internal rate of return on the death benefit. So if I have this policy, right, and I'm going to keep it till age 90. right? They can take a look at all the premiums that I paid into the policy, and now that it is paid out, what type of investment was it? Did it earn 3%? Did it earn 6%? So it's again, if I have $1 million in my portfolio, right, and I want to be able to take $250,000 of that and purchase this life insurance policy even into my 60s or 70s, assuming I can get underwritten, well, I can take that $250,000 and I might be able to turn it into $400,000 or $500,000 or $600,000. Now, if I die the next day, it's going to be a very, very good internal rate of return on my insurance policy. It's going to be, you know, 200% overnight, right? But if I start getting into—
But you have to be dead.
You have to be dead. That's the rub. But yeah. But if you're not going to spend down all of your assets, if that last check to the mortuary is not going to bounce, right, and there is going to be some inheritance there to your heirs, well, I can take a part of my portfolio, I can de-risk my overall securities portfolio, I can purchase this life insurance policy and really leverage that dollar and be able to get a rate of return, maybe it's 6% or 7%, with basically taking little to no risk. For me to get 7% in my securities portfolio, I'm going to have to take a little bit of risk to do that.
The catch is, though, you really have to want to leave something to your heirs because, as we said, you know, it can look great on paper, but if you can't use it in your lifetime, it really, you need to make sure that you want somebody or something to have it upon your death.
But just drilling down on your initial question, let's separate the investment portion of the life insurance policy to the actual life portion. And so what— when you're 23 years old, it makes sense to have some term life insurance because you have a young child and you have responsibilities. There used to be certain beliefs that if you're 60, 65, you still should have term insurance in order to pay maybe tax liabilities or whatever other issues that could come about. Is there a need to have a term life insurance policy as you get older?
Well, as you get older, as you really start getting into your 60s and 70s, you're not really talking. There's not too many companies that will write a term policy on a 65-year-old because we're starting to get into those normal life expectancy type ages that they're just going to underwrite you for, you know, as a
permanent
policy.
I take it you don't watch daytime television.
No, but I am a fan of Judge Judy. If I'm home, I'm watching Judge Judy.
Because there are a lot of commercials for, you know, if you're 90 years old, you can get term and policy. You know?
Yes. No, they're that's
maybe what you need to insert is reputable companies.
Okay. That note to self, I'm going to put a TV in my office and start getting up on what's going on.
But I think what is important, though, is disability insurance. So let's talk a little bit about that. No, I'm sorry, not disability insurance, long-term care insurance.
Yes.
Because really, as we all age and our life expectancy grows, we're all going to need more help than if we had, you know, passed away earlier. So what's going on? What's new? What's different?
What about a younger wife? Is that work?
That's one way, but it's an expensive way because you have to get divorced first.
Oh. And from someone in the business, she could never have too much life insurance on the older husband.
Right. Another good rule of thumb.
the biggest change that we've seen in the long-term care arena, and this kind of goes into the last question about people over the age of 65, is people getting away from traditional long-term care insurance. Traditional meaning that it's something that if you don't use it, you lose it. Kind of like your car insurance, your home insurance, your auto, and you know all those things that you kind of hope you never use, right?
But right, you hope it's a big waste of money.
Exactly. When you're on that the hospital bed and you close your eyes for the last time, you say, I wasted all that money. You're going to hope that's the conversation there, right? But what the insurance companies have done is that they've created life insurance policies with a long-term care rider on it. So if I have a $500,000 life insurance policy, and in the event that I need care, I can take it's called an accelerated death benefit, right? Where I'm accelerating that death benefit, I'm able to reach into that policy and take some of it. So I'm able to use that death benefit, and guess what? I don't have to die, right? It's kind of the best part about it. So if I go and I spend $200,000 off of that $500,000 life insurance policy, well, $300,000, and then I pass, the $300,000 that's remaining is going to go to my children, right? So all of it is used one way or the other, whether it's by me, by way of me using it for elderly care, or to my kids or my church or my charity or whoever.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit the KellyMarshTeam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Okay, forest animals. Kids are coming to the forest and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay, squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we have in studio with us Matt Fish, who's an insurance specialist for Anderson Insurance Solutions. And so, you know, Matt, in our last segment, you know, you've been in the insurance industry now for, you know, almost 20 years. What have been some of the biggest changes that you've seen or experienced in the industry?
Well, we talked a little bit about in the last segment was long-term care. That's definitely one of the major changes. As people are living longer and longer, they're going to need care. And, you know, whether it's going to be you who's going to be the person, everybody always says that it's not going to happen to them. So whether it's going to be you who's going to need the care or maybe your spouse, you're going to be on one end of it. So people really, really need to provide for that because it gets very expensive. You can spend your entire life saving, putting money away for retirement, for all these things that you want to make, you know, your life better, and then all of a sudden you get sick, you need care, and within just a few short years, all of that is gone. So we've seen a tremendous uptick in the level of interest in the long-term care side.
I think a lot of that has to do with the sandwich generation who, you know, they're taking care of not only their kids but also their parents at the same time, and mm-hmm. so they realize they don't want to have that be that same burden. Mm-hmm. To their children.
I mean, some of the long-term care sales that we get are people calling up and saying, "I just cared for my father for the last 3 years," or "I never thought I would be bathing my mother, and I've been doing that for the last 2 years, and I never want to have that happen for my child. I don't care what it costs. Who do I make the check out to? I'm getting myself some coverage for that."
And have you seen in the long-term care industry the policies being better? Or have you just seen them changing so that they're more versatile?
Well, they're definitely getting better in that they've been able to level out the premiums. What happened when people first started buying long-term care over the last 20 years, they didn't really have enough data to know how to underwrite it, right? So people are seeing very large – they were loaded with promises that the insurance company was on the hook for, and they were severely underpriced, so it was a good deal. But what's happened is that the prices have come up. And now they've been able to, now that there's a lot more data in there, they can go and figure out what you're buying relative to the price and be able to level out that premium for people.
Thank you, Matthew Fish. Thank you for your education. How do we get in touch with you?
We're right downtown. My office line is 805-569-7666. I'm at Extension 2, or you can email me at Matt, M-A-T-T, at AndersonFS.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's